next one, but the next one after. So thank you all for joining us. Bye for now.
Hello and welcome to Cancri, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Ooh, that is not having a great time there. Seem to be picking up audio from somewhere. Oh, well, we'll figure it out. So, yes, we are back at Cancri, home of Canada's queer media. I have figured out the issue here. All right. And thank you, Sebastian, for joining us. Always a pleasure to have, always a pleasure to have you. You co-host the show.
Yeah, well,
couldn't do it without you.
Yes. Generally, yes. You could say that. Yes.
Absolutely. Now, I feel like there's been things going on. And I think it is only fitting that we start off this week with me putting up my hands and saying, based on the facts available, I was wrong.
Oh, was I wrong?
Heavily insinuated. I don't think we were overly. I think we've, you know, I'm usually pretty good about saying, you know, allegedly and accused and and so on and so forth. But with the sheer volume of men that made allegations against Kevin Spacey, the former lead actor of House of Cards, the idea that it's just the evidence against him was pretty astonishing. But like I said, I will put my hands up and say, you know, at the Southwark Crown Court this past week, he was found not guilty by a jury of his peers, or at least the general public anyway, and of the various charges that he was facing in the UK. The court case involved, I believe, about four different people who had brought accusations against him. And essentially, he was found not guilty, but as I mentioned, I think I have been less than forgiving of Kevin Spacey over the over the years since his allegations came out.
Now, to be fair to you, though, under the English common law system, not guilty doesn't mean innocent. It just means we can't prove that you did it with beyond a shadow of a doubt. There is actually, aren't there systems that actually have a separate not guilty and innocent? Like those are two separate things. Like innocent is we can prove that you definitely did not do it, and not guilty just means that we cannot prove that you are guilty. I don't know. Either way, I try to hedge my bets with that kind of thing. You know, on the one hand, where there's smoke, there's fire. On the other hand, hey, we don't know. We should see the evidence, you know? I've seen a few reports of Kevin Spacey apparently wept tears of relief when he got the verdict. It's one of those smaller stories, but it's part of a larger story that's been ongoing for what, 3 years now, 4 years now?
Absolutely.
7 years now? Well, who knows? It's been a while.
He was accused of being a sexual bully, of not respecting personal boundaries of space. And, you know, we didn't really... We mentioned a couple of times as the story went on that the court case was happening, but we never really...
We didn't really go into details.
Yeah, no, and I don't think we're going to do so now either. As I said, four different men... went to court against him. We were made aware of other cases around that. You know, I think his defense accused, you know, said that one of them was just a clumsy pass. is how we had phrased one of the incidents. His defense claimed that it was a lot of these encounters were just being reframed in the context of, you know, the allegations coming in, sort of jumping on the bandwagon, as it were.
Right, yeah.
Either way, the jury did not find him guilty. And of course, we might...
I do remember, it was about a year ago now, one of the many cases in the States. As per usual, it was a laundry list of accusations, and I remember a couple of them were dismissed on the premise of what he did was not great and not gentlemanly, let's say, but he didn't break any laws in doing so. So it seems like the cases coming out of the UK are pretty similar. They're not necessarily condoning his activities as being the kind of thing you should do when you're approaching someone, but he didn't break any laws either, which is... I don't know. I mean, you're basically just a serial sleazebag at this point in time. I think that'd be the way to put it, that he is a serial sleazebag. And occasionally he's stepped over the line, and occasionally he did not step over the, at least not the legal line, but was just kind of sleazy. And being sleazy is not illegal so long as you keep your hands to yourself and don't force anyone to anything. And I think that's just what we're seeing now, is that just a long life of sleaziness. Some of which did cross the line and has resulted in guilty verdicts in some jurisdictions and in some cases, but yeah. Not always.
Well, after 4 weeks, on his 63rd birthday, no less, he was found not guilty of the charges against him. But, you know, I think even since this began, we have been talking about Kevin Spacey and the allegations against him for 8 years, because that's how long this court case has been. Well, not this specific court case, but the allegations broke 8 years ago. He told the courts that he hasn't really had any work in 8 years, and that there were projects just waiting for when he got back, presumably once cleared of these particular charges. Sorry, once found not guilty of these particular charges. Now, I think it's interesting because although he may have been found not guilty of these charges, I have a suspicion that every room he's going to enter, every nightclub he walks into, people are going to be far more on guard around him than ever before. Any house party he miraculously is invited to, people will be more cautious about where folks are drunk and stood maybe too close. Because the kinds he said himself, that he was a promiscuous and a flirt, and that doesn't make him a bad person. You know, his defense, he said something was a clumsy pass. But, you know, his reputation has certainly been altered here, and I suspect that Hollywood may be a little bit more wary of him moving forward.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There's been a long history of sleazebags in Hollywood, very promiscuous individuals. Actually, also in the music industry, if you want to look at heavy metal, the hair metal bands in the 80s were famous for putting out, also, you know, Mick Jagger and that kind of thing. The difference between a regular sleazebag and a sleazebag that attracts the attention of the media is whether or not you take no for an answer. And I think that's the difference, is that if you're looking at, I don't know, you know, the members of Whitesnake, you know, the MTV behind the music kind of a reputation that celebrities can sometimes have. They make a pass at everyone and anything, but the difference between them and somebody like what we're looking at here is how they react when the person they're hitting on is hesitant or just flat out says no. Do you say, well, you know, okay, fine, good on you. You know, maybe you could say something sassy like, well, you're missing out or whatever, but still, that's not really forcing in anyone, but, you know, just move on and go. You're a celebrity. There'll be another person. Just wait an hour, you know, especially if you're backstage. Like, you can hit on anyone you want. Just when they say no, be like, oh, okay. Like, it's I don't know. Not that I'm condoning hitting on everyone, you know, but I'm saying if you are going to do so, you can only do so and get away with it if you accept no as an answer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know,
legally get away with it, not socially get away with it. Because eventually people are going to be like, woo, he's a sleazebag. And then they're just going to start hanging out with you and stop inviting you to events and whatnot.
Exactly.
After parties are where it's at. That's where your next job comes from half the time.
Well, we'll see how it goes. I'm sure with, you know, someone's acting chops such as Kevin Spacey, he won't be out of work for too long. There are certainly going to be independent studios and the such that would happily snap him up during this time. But yeah, we'll see. But I wanted to kick it off and sort of mea culpa. You know, I tried to, you know, refer to it as allegedly, and you know, allegations are. But I think maybe my perspective on this is as clear as the sky is today. So, right,
I do like the idea of him having a second coming in D tier cinema. So, like, we recently watched Cocaine Bear, you and I.
Yes, surprisingly good.
I wouldn't say it was a good movie, but it was a much better movie than it should have been. I would give it a B+, and from premise alone, you would assume it's a D movie, but it's actually not that bad. But I actually would like to see him in the D tier knockoff movie industry, the kind of thing that's straight to Tubi. So, like, there's, you know, after Cocaine Bear came out, Cocaine Shark came out not long after. Mm-hmm. I would love to see him as the star of Cocaine Honey Badger, that real D tier knockoff cinema. That a lot of has-been celebrities, unfortunately, make their way into, you know, sooner better than later. Better him than somebody we actually like.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of, sticking to Canada for a while, talking about gay news, this is a Canadian story that's actually taking place in Italy. Now, that was a beautiful photograph of I want to just make sure I get the names right. It was a Canadian couple, BJ Barone and Frank Nelson, who welcomed their son Milo in June 2014, which is Pride. It was beautiful. It was an incredible event. Very, very exciting. Their photographer, Lindsay Foster, got some really great photos. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this photo of their surrogacy went viral because it's, you know, a very powerful image. And then it was used by the leading political party in Italy. Let me get the name here. Anyway, the leading political party is Fratelli d'Italia. May have mispronounced that. My apologies. But it is led by the current Prime Minister of Italy. I think we mentioned before that their more right-wing government recently got elected. So they came forward. But this political party in Italy just straight up used the image as part of their propaganda against surrogacy. Mm-hmm. Featuring this couple. So the couple and the photographer all sued the political party in Italy. It's been before the Italian courts for an awfully long time. And the decision just came out in the case. So the two gentlemen, they have actually won the case, which is excellent. Several legal firms offered to take it on, you know, no win, no fees kind of approach. And then just shortly after that, unfortunately, well, actually just before that, Lindsay Foster, her case was dismissed because although she took the photograph, she wasn't in the photograph.
Okay.
So in Italian law, the case of the copyright ownership wasn't, you know, they say wasn't maybe necessarily argued as much as opposed to the subjects of the photos being misappropriated in literally the opposite message of what that photo was designed to capture. So the judge dismissed her portion of the case. She was out by about $8,000. Give or take, having to pay the various legal fees. Anyway, in about a couple of days ago, there was a GoFundMe campaign set up to help cover these fees. And it's already past the target. So we're not going to give you the GoFundMe names because at this point, it's already fully achieved. Lindsay Foster, the person who did it, made some quick comments. I'll read them here, and I'm just jumping ahead a little bit. And I quote, "I must admit that this has spread some much-needed light in a dark and unfortunate situation when it comes to copyright infringement and the Italian judge's ruling after 7 years. I wish my story is different. I wish I was currently in the position of telling everyone I fought for my clients and their photo, and one knowing I did everything I could to protect what wasn't the Fratelli d'Italia's image to take and use. But here I am, having to pay the court cost for losing against who is now Italy's prime minister. It just seems so unreal to me." But yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting case. You know, like, you take a nice, loving, beautiful moment of joy, and 7 years later, you're in court against the Italian prime minister. I mean, I can't imagine how you would, like, that seems ridiculous to even write. I mean, that hardly seems plausible, but that's the situation that these folks found themselves in.
So somebody did win, right? Because, like, you have the people in the photo and you have the photographer, and definitely this was used without permission. So somebody had their rights violated in some way. And yeah, maybe the Italian courts.
Yeah, the way it was argued, it was the two Canadian men who were in the photo. It was found that they were, their court case won, but it was okay. Actually, the possession of the copyright piece was dismissed. So yeah, but of course, 7 years later, the political party in Italy fought it all the way to the very end. Yeah, that's sort of where that came in. But yeah, but I thought it was an interesting take. I will be maybe a little bit more guarded, and hopefully some great photos of me don't go viral. Although, first of all, you'd have to find a great photo of me. That would be at least a viral-worthy one. Okay. Well, let's jump to our first song. This is She They by TYA, and we will be back just after this.
She said, "Can you drive me home, please? I had a little too much whiskey. We're out with all our friends, but she asked me, alone together, but for safety. Catching feelings I don't want to, but she got so many tattoos. Never mind the fact she's dating a dude. I want to, but I knew we'd never work. Her eyes are way too pretty. I never love someone as perfect as them. I never drive the limit, but I'm going 60 sober for her. She heard, they, them, is the one that I want. She heard, they, them, is he telling you on? Does she see, he, him? You know I won't fuck you, but why she say it like she want to?
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. I want to apologize for that. That song was actually mislabeled. I only just caught the profanity in it, so we'll file a complaint about how they've labeled that one. And again, apologies to our audience for that. I don't think Side Boob quite crosses the line, but there was another part of it that certainly did. So we will look into it. And again, our apologies. Now, you passed along a story. I mean, this is one that's really sort of dominating the news in terms of the care and attention being provided to refugees across the country. Yes. You know, and that certainly includes LGBTQ refugees, although, there is a bit of a different way that those folks are coming into the country. But why don't you expand on it a little bit for us?
Well, the story came to my attention because it came to my mother's attention, and it came to my mother's attention because she was actually in church, and at the end of the service, a Kenyan refugee came in and asked if it was the kind of church that had shelter, and the answer was unfortunately no. They had to relocate recently, and their current facilities don't have that. But it kind of led down a little rabbit hole where they found out that the number of LGBT refugees coming in from East Africa, especially Uganda and Kenya, into Canada is so great that they're displacing them out of Quebec and into Toronto. And in Toronto, there are so many refugees and asylum seekers that the shelters there are turning away an average of 273 people per day. So 273 extra people per day are sleeping on the streets that night because they're overfilled. And what's happening is some of those individuals are moving out to other nearby cities with shelters, and a lot of them are ending up in Hamilton, which is where my mother lives. There is this unfortunate trend, and I've heard this actually, I've seen this in many different stories from many different refugees from around the world, that they're being promised all sorts of things when they reach Canada that are simply not there. We do not have the facilities that we're promising them. And a lot of people are ending up on the streets, and there is concern that it sometimes among the refugees as well, that, I mean, it's harsh to say, but would they have been better off before they came here? At least they had a roof over their heads, you know, at least they had a meal to eat. And there is that issue. The danger is completely different, obviously. But there is concern about how Canada is failing to house and help the asylum seekers that are coming here. Now, of course, there's all kinds of programs to help get people off the streets, not just, you know, homeless shelters, but also things like, you know, the Rainbow Refuge and various organizations that help homelessness among LGBT refugees and asylum seekers. And they're underfunded. And there is just there's a huge issue going on here with essentially homelessness among refugees and asylum seekers coming to Canada, especially the LGBTQ folks, because they tend to come over in huge batches. It just has to do with how we get them from East Africa or Chechnya to North America. They tend to come over like a couple thousand at a time, and the system can't absorb them. So there are concerns about how, well, they can't absorb them all at once. They can eventually, but just there's just...
I wouldn't. Yeah. I wouldn't be entirely sure about that thousands at a time number. I think we might want to double check that particular volume. But I mean, you're certainly right in terms of, you know, major events happening. You know, just this past week, we've been keeping an eye on a court case that was designed to try and stop a very, very anti-gay law in Ghana. That one just failed at the Supreme Court level in Ghana. It's set to make it same-sex activities. Couldn't find the right word for it there. Illegal and all sorts of things. It, you know, brings it in line with other incredibly strict anti-homosexuality, such as the one recently passed in Uganda, which is currently the worst in the world. But even Kenya is also looking at introducing anti-gay legislation. And yeah, there was also protests recently in Botswana. So just all over the place, there are these things, and all of them are driving folks out, and folks are heading to Canada amongst a very small number of what are perceived as safe nations. Maybe how safe we are when you have to sleep outside is something that needs to be revisited. But compared to, you know, I mean, it's not ideal, but also... I feel like the legal situation in Kenya and Ghana and Uganda are also simply not ideal either. Any way forward here?
I mean, we're not Australia, but you know, the out of doors is trying to kill you in Canada. The heat waves in the summer and the freezing cold in the winter, it's not a good place to experience homelessness. And mark my words, in 2 weeks to a month, the system is going to be worsened. This is not LGBT news, but there was an incident this morning in Haiti where the locals were so tired of ineffective police and government corruption that the people have just risen up and started murdering gang members in the streets. It's really quite dramatic. There are ongoing things. As for how to resolve this, I mean, I don't know. There had been talk for the longest time of why do we have sort of metropolitan, I don't want to call them dumping ports, but effectively that's what it turns into, that refugees often end up just being placed in Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, sometimes Quebec City, sometimes places in Alberta. But there are all these metropolitan centers, and they can only absorb so much. Meanwhile, you have other communities that are not strained and are willing to accept refugees. So, I mean, it would have to be on a volunteer basis, but could we set up a system for somewhere like Guelph, for example, to say, look, we've got 50 free beds, we can take 50 people. We can help transition them out of the shelters and into jobs and homes. And we'll keep you updated on how fast we can make that happen. I mean, really, this should be a top-down and bottom-up sort of cooperative process across the country if we are going to take in this many people all at once. And there is a housing shortage, and we are failing to house our refugees and asylum seekers properly. I mean, it's got to be. We can't just keep sending them to Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal and expecting them to take care of it, because it's just overburdening the local system. Canada as a whole can handle it, no doubt at all, but we're not doing this as Canada as a whole. We're doing this as a few cities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's not fair in the cities. That's especially not fair on the asylum seekers and refugees.
Well, I do recall that just last week the federal government did step up in terms of increasing support. I think it was specifically the case of Toronto after things had kind of bubbled up really to a tipping point in that city. But yeah, it's definitely a concern for sure. You know, I've always been quite proud of the Canadian system for asylum seekers and refugees. You know, in fact, one of the other stories that we had lined up for today is about Chechnya. There is a group. Let me see if I can find where I put it. Nope, that's not where I put it. There is a group in Chechnya. I'll find it in a minute. But there is a group in Chechnya, essentially like it's a group of human rights activists that have sort of very loosely coalesced around following the LGBT purge. Now, just quickly for our listeners, you know, a few years ago, the leader of the Chechen Republic inside of Russia essentially decided that he was done with gay people and would round them up. Allegations of torture were rampant. People were forced in torture sessions to give the list of names who may or may not themselves be gay. It was almost irrelevant. They would then be rounded up and tortured and so on and so forth. And it was quite the ordeal overall. But at the time, something that the leader of the Chechen Republic said that sort of jumps out was, you know, if you like the gays, you can take them to Canada, take them wherever, just get them away from me. And just that idea of taking them to Canada as being a bit of a safe haven. You know, even all that time later, there was a singer that the Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov is accused of killing. Now, we did mention that he was one of the people who just went, just straight up disappeared during the purge. But now this group allege that they spoke to folks inside Ramzan Kadyrov's governing body, and amongst others. So it was Zelimkan Bakev, and I apologize if I have mispronounced his name. But in the new report from SKSOS, which, as I mentioned, is a Russian loose collective of human rights activists, they have been really looking into where these people disappeared and allegations. There was a video released saying that he was in Germany. They were able to ascertain that the video was actually taken in Russia. The guy was, you may recall this, he was going to his parents' funeral or something, and he was going to a funeral of a family flying from Moscow. FSB, you know, packaged him up and sent him all the way over to Chechnya, which he'd been actively trying to avoid on account of the purge. But details have emerged, including that allegedly the reason why he was particularly targeted is because there is a photograph of the leader of the Russian Republic of Chechnya shaking hands with this openly gay pop star at the